We're going to take these one by one, bring them in for what I think is going to be a really good roundtable on the state of the music business at this point in time. We have with us on line one a gentleman who is a record producer, who has been an executive in the music business and on the label side. This person has worked with Alice Cooper, Kix, Winger, Warrant, Fiona, Streets, Europe, and Rat. Very well-rounded experience and some of my favorite groups in there. We welcome to the FDH Lounge, Bo Hill. Bo, thank you for joining us tonight, sir. Good to have you on.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And something just happened where I can barely hear you now.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll try to address that. We'll try to see what we can do. On line three, we have joining us a gentleman who's got a really interesting job. We're going to want to draw this out a little bit more. He works for HOR Entertainment Group. They are a full-service entertainment company with HOR Records, HOR Publishing, HOR Film and Television, and HOR Merchandise. This gentleman is Vice President of New Media, so it'll be interesting to get his take on that. We, of course, in this show are a part of New Media. We're fascinated by it. It'll be interesting to talk to this gentleman, Hab Haddad, joining us as well. Hab, welcome. Good to have you on tonight, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Ryan. I appreciate it, and look forward to the show here. And just to reiterate Bo's last comment, everything was nice and loud up until you put me on the mic, so the volume dropped down, but I can still hear you, and I'm looking forward to tonight's conversation.
Oh. All right, thank you. We'll try to address that. The third guest that we have on with us for this panel right now is a record producer who has worked with a lot of the greats, Europe, Journey, Mr. Big, and one of my all-time favorites. This is just outstanding. Leonard Skinner. I am a big Skinner honk. So it's a pleasure, again, to have on this gentleman with us, Kevin Elson, to the FDH Lounge. Kevin.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, good to have you in tonight, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Same story. You dropped down a little bit.
That is a common issue here tonight. I hope you guys will be able to hear okay. We'll do what we can on this end. I guess we could just kind of take these questions probably sequentially along the phone lines. Bo, we got you on line one. Hab, we got you on three. Kevin, we got you on four. So I guess we can just take them sequentially here. The first one that I like to put out, because we've been looking at some issues with the FDH Lounge over the course of the last decade in many different areas, whether it be sports, movies, even some politics and geopolitics. One of the things we talked about with pop culture and music, it's a decade where, at least as far as the mainstream went, we're sort of hard-pressed to put our finger on any kind of big innovations that really broke through. As far as when, maybe around the middle of the decade, you know, you had some emo and some modern rock. That was when you had, you know, the Killers breaking out and, you know, some of the other bands of the time similar to that. But I'm hard-pressed to identify a lot of things that weren't in one way or another sort of rehashed 90s trends and just repeating things over the course of the previous decade. I'd like to see how you guys see the last decade in terms of innovation or lack thereof. And, yeah, I guess we'll start with you on line one, Bo.
Well, it's a great question. And I guess I would have to sort of agree with your original analysis. I haven't really heard that many things that I thought were truly groundbreaking, and indeed a lot of things that that were kind of a rehashing of music that's already seen its day in the sun.
Yeah, it's been an odd thing. I can't think of another decade where that's really been the case. Hab, what are your thoughts on that, of what we've been through over the course of the last decade and any innovations or lack thereof?
Ryan, on the music side of things, I would kind of agree with Bo. I wouldn't say that there's been too many innovations on the music side of things, things that we haven't heard before or felt before. But if anything, I would say in the music business, what's kind of been breakthrough is more technology than music itself. And if you would say there's anything that's kind of like a breakthrough, you would say is the mass amount of music that's being put out in the world today, as opposed to, you know, a decade ago or two decades ago, where you have the least amount of music being purchased but the most amount of music being published. So if anything, I'm more on the music side of things. I wouldn't say there's been breakthrough as far as musicality, but I would say on the technology side there has been.
Interesting. I guess, yeah, that's a good point. I guess it all depends on where you're looking for the innovation. Maybe it comes in a different place than where we've traditionally seen it. Kevin, what are your thoughts on where we've been over the last 10 years?
I'd have to agree that technology has definitely made a statement in the last 10 years, but in that, I think it's ruined musicians and bands. You know, you used to develop bands, and they'd play clubs, and record companies would see them, and the artists would develop. They create songs, create a career, you know, a live following, and now it's all, you know, guys sitting in a basement with a machine and correcting everything with Pro Tools, and it's, you know, all the talent is slowly withered away, you know, and it's really unfortunate. The labels became so interested in instant hit and let's get this out there. You know, it costs $50,000 instead of $300,000 to make this record, and we're, you know, the profit margins and everything else. And you'll rarely see a group with more than two albums anymore. You know, it just, you know, it's really unfortunate that it got pushed into a corner like that. But you know, times change and everything. It's just, I think, as far as music, though, it's really, really hurt. You know, the talent's just not coming through anymore.
Yeah, and that's that's true as far as the development of you know, long range careers that are really going to have the staying power of what we've seen from times past. What's interesting to me is that the last decade, and every decade has nostalgia, it seems, to previous decades, and sometimes it goes in loops here. I know the 70s, there was a strong 50s nostalgia, and things kind of go cyclically, but as far as classic rock goes, I mean, the last decade, we saw so many comeback tours, Kiss, Metallica, Van Halen, Heaven and Hell, you know, the whole, you know, Black Sabbath, Dio thing there. Classic bands with the new singers out there, whether it be Queen or Journey or Yes. And I wonder to what extent is there any sort of crowding effect there in the music business? When you've got, you know, monsters like this still asserting themselves, and they have every right to do so, and the marketplace is going to determine these things as well they should, but I wonder if that to any extent potentially keeps newer artists from gaining that kind of foothold and being viewed on the scale of these bands here. Bo, I will start with you on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the fans that are out there, as Kevin so appropriately put it, you know, most artists nowadays are hard pressed to get two albums out there, and it's difficult to establish a real following where the artist has become sort of a marker of where you are in your life, and I think that's what people are really yearning for, and that's why all of these reunion tours, etc., are so successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, these bands establish themselves in such a way that, you know, it becomes hard maybe for some of these other bands to ever be viewed as being on that kind of iconic level. What are your thoughts on that, on the way that the business has been over the last decade and the very strong nostalgia aspect to it?
Well, with regard to the legacy acts that are out there, and ironically enough, I just got off the Kiss tour. I was out there with them for 3 months. I do a lot of their new media as well. And you're right, the marketplace dictates what will sell and what won't. Most of the legacy acts, when they do tour, their ticket prices are pretty high. So if the marketplace won't support that, no one will go to the show, but it does. And I think the reason that is more based on demographics more than anything, in the sense that most of these people who go to see these legacy artists are people, you know, in their 30s and 40s and 50s who are now in that mode of their lives where they have money. They, you know, they're working. They remember these bands back in their heyday, and nowadays it's all part of the nostalgia effect. And with our largest part of our population being the oldest part of our population, I think that's the reason you see all these legacy acts still doing well. And in fact, in the music industry, there's kind of a bit of a shaking in our boots, if you will, about the fact that we don't really think that there's going to be very many more Rolling Stones in our time, the Beatles, the Zeppelins, the Pink Floyds, the Kisses, the Ozzy Osbournes, all these, you know, amphitheater acts. We don't necessarily think that that's going to be coming around besides a unique situation like a Taylor Swift or, you know, something of that nature. Those type of acts are very hard to nurture and create from a developing standpoint. So it's just a matter of your perspective, but new bands are out there. People are still interested in music. Music is probably one of the most passionate forms of media on the internet. It's just a matter of changing people. Like the kids of today are used to experiencing things through a computer in their home, where back in our day we went to concerts. We got out of the house, so that we didn't have the internet to kind of like suck us into our bedroom. We were more of a physical world. Today we're in a digital world. So legacy artists, classic rock bands that can fill up amphitheaters are going to be dinosaurs soon to come, and it's just a matter of time before it's going to be a different type of music business in the next decade to come, I think.
Very good points, and with what you mentioned about Kiss also, I do have a subsequent question coming up for each of you guys as far as, you know, this vast ecosystem that is the music business and how it's changing and evolving. I want to get each of you guys to talk about what you're doing as a part of that right now and where you guys are fitting into that with your present careers. I do want to ask all three of you guys about that, certainly. Kevin, what are your thoughts on this? The as Hab called it, the legacy acts in this business here and the market share, if you will, that they're taking up as opposed to the new bands that are coming up?
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, the older crowd, which I fit into, you know, grew up on the mystique of music. You know, I'd hear about a band, and I couldn't find out anything about them unless I might, you know, maybe find a magazine that had something about them. And so I lived through the music that the band was generating. And so my big interest was to learn, you know, listen to an entire record and get it, and they were great records. I mean, it wasn't one song and a bunch of filler. And then you go see them live, and you'd find out more about them. And so there was a whole a following. And I just think the attention span now with the internet and MTV and everything, you're just bombarded, and that's why there's so many artists out there fighting for that space. It's so easy to produce something out there, because you can do it on your own and link it up into, you know, cyber world. And my feeling is the concert business is going to pretty much die as soon as these legacy acts go away. The most successful thing I've seen is really the radio shows, when they combine, you know, like seven or eight bands playing 20, 25 minutes. And it's an amazing atmosphere, because you get, you know, in the old days it was like the Dick Clark Cavalcade of Stars, and you'd see, you know, like Herman's Hermits and the Beach Boys and Buffalo Springfield and maybe eight bands all playing their hits. And it's probably going to go back to that kind of format, you know, to get exposure to music and get people in the seats, because, you know, an act selling a million units now is lucky to sell a theater. And it's just different times.
Well, you know what? In light of that question and the responses I got from you guys, it seems a logical follow-up to go to something that we talked about on this show 2 weeks ago, when we were looking at the decade in review, and we were looking at a lot of different aspects of pop culture. But then when we got to music, one of the observations I made at the time was that, and I'm, you know, a child of the 80s, and I, you know, for all intents and purposes, in terms of music that gets played on the radio, you know, I like the stuff that, you know, rocks harder. Never really been a pop music kind of a guy, but I observed that, you know, in the 80s when I was growing up, I couldn't run from Wham. I couldn't run from Culture Club. I couldn't run from Howard Jones as much as I wanted to. But, man, today I can wall myself off. I don't know anything that the Jonas Brothers do. I've caught bits and pieces of one or two Taylor Swift things. It takes like a Lady Gaga or somebody like that to really be able to break through. We're so fragmented these days. And I think that's the word, right, I keep coming back to, you know, is the fragmentation here and the effect on that. When we look at that, What kind of an effect does that have on when we talk about, well, there will never be another Rolling Stones, there will never be another band like this or that or whatever? You know, to what role does the fragmentation play in that? Bo, I'll start with you.
Well, I think it plays a very significant role. Again, it's hard for all of these artists in all of these little teeny fragments to gain enough traction to be able to get the kind of national and international exposure and impact that we enjoyed, several years ago. I think part of that is the diminished import of terrestrial radio, because that was a good, it was a way where when Kevin would release a record, he knew it was going to be on 250 radio stations on Monday at 12 o'clock, and you can really build a lot off of that, and I think that the impact of terrestrial radio kind of going further and further and further away because people are, they hunt it out on the internet and sit in their bedroom. I think that's had a tremendous impact on the ultimate creation of really meaningful long-term bands.
Those are excellent points there. Yeah, I mean, with terrestrial radio, we talk about it all the time on this show about how it's just dying on the vine in so many different ways, which, and it's a fortunate segue here that the next person to ask about this on line three. Hab, you're dealing with things in new media. Perhaps out of the three, I mean, there's a chance that you might be seeing this potentially the most. When you look at it from the new media perspective here and the way that people are partaking in music these days, to what extent does that fragmentation play in, and does it, challenge us that there will never be another act that really kind of unifies and gets the universal airplay like bands of the past?
Well, I definitely think that we live in a different time, and depending on what type of band you are, whether you're developing mid-level, an A-level act, and you're playing amphitheaters, you have to figure out what your audience is, who your fan base is, and kind of cater to that type of information that they expect to see. I think it was Kevin that mentioned that back in the day, and we're all, at least I am, I'm a product of the 80s as well, like when a record came out, we purchased that record, and we lived with that record for months, and listen to that record over and over and over because you weren't going to get anything new from that artist. Barely would you get a radio interview or a article in the paper. Bands were very mysterious back then. In today's day and age, kids are taught different. My child's 4.5 years old. He will not know a world without the internet. All of his friends will not know a world without the internet. So the way our children are being taught today, it's kind of like attention deficit disorder, constant information at a moment's notice all the time, 24 hours a day. And if they don't get that, then they're frustrated, they move on to the next thing. So part of what I do with my artists that we work with at HOR and some of the management companies that I consult with, we advise them and basically say, if your artist, developing artist typically, doesn't post something on their blog or on their Twitter or whatever on a daily basis, it's like a newspaper. If you put out a newspaper with no news in it, people will stop reading it. Same thing in the music business in today's day, not 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but if you're not posting news on your site on a daily basis, your fans stop coming to your website. They stop visiting you. They stop going to your MySpace page because they're constantly used to more information all the time. They want something every 5 minutes, every day, if you wait a week or two before posting, they're not going to visit your site again. It's one of those things where it's attention deficit disorder. It's like people just want constant information all the time. They want instant access to their artists. Where back in the day, Pink Floyd was a mystery to us. Learning about Led Zeppelin's likes and dislikes were impossible to know. It was all hearsay. It was a mystery. Today, you got Taylor Swift YouTubing and Twittering everything that she's ever done, from getting up in the morning to brushing her teeth all the way to the end of the night when she tucks herself into bed. So it's one of those things where I just think we have a different world, a different world of fans that we're catering to, and the industry is changing. And I think it was also Kevin that said that the live touring industry is going to be completely different. You're not going to see, a huge amphitheater act. You're going to see 5, 6, 7 acts on one bill, more of a festival-type situation, and they're all going to play 20 to 45 minutes, depending on the act, and that's the kind of way you're going to draw crowds between 10,000 and 50,000 kids in one location. It's with multiple acts, not with just one.
Interesting points, and yeah, the fact that the 24/7 news cycle, has really changed the way that we live. I can see where it would affect the music business in that way too, and the demystification of the stars, with the way that they're sharing and in some instances oversharing of their lives through social media. Those are interesting points as well. Kevin, how are you seeing this in the work that you do there, as far as the challenges for the bands to break through the fragmentation? It seems like nobody's ever really able to do that these days.
Well, it's rare, and the interesting point is the U.S. is so different as a music buying and audience public for shows. I still traveled touring, and I can go to Europe and I'll see 10 bands that are absolutely huge, and I wonder, okay, we're all in the same world here, but there's less radio, I know that, and there's less actual video, there's MTV, but there's not a constant barrage, the Disney Channel and all this other stuff that are breaking these new acts, for the younger crowd, but I saw Pink in Australia last March when I was there. And, Pink does well in the U.S., but if she can sell out one night at the Garden or something like that, great. Well, she sold 56 shows in Australia with the population, I couldn't even guess what the music buying population is. But to sell out, it was 600,000, 700,000 tickets. And she did the same in Europe, but that's just a small case. There's bands like Muse, which is, they're absolutely huge through Europe, and, they sell out Wembley stadiums and things like that. So it's a different world. I mean, for some reason, the U.S., is in overload, and I don't see that as much, say, in Europe and Australia and probably the same in Japan.
The Australians are an interesting cultural market, period. Hulk Hogan just did a bunch of sellout shows over there. So that shows you in many ways. Yeah, maybe they're not used to getting as many, touring acts there.
Well, they definitely, that is a major thing there.
Yeah, it could be. It seems indicative of a populace starved for live entertainment, if that's what qualifies for the cutting edge.
Yeah.
But like I said, I want to ask each of you guys talk about what you're doing presently here. But my penultimate question for each of you guys here, just to get some thoughts, could be macro level with industry trends, micro level, if there's somebody in particular that you want to make a prediction on that you think is about to break out, whether it be in this year, in this decade, whatever. And just looking at industry trends, and again, it could be a genre of music. We talked about that. Really haven't had much in the last decade that's come along that's been really innovative. Is that about to change in any way? And any type of predictions, broad or narrow, that any of you guys would have, just kind of looking at the biz right now. Bo, we'll start with you on line one.
Well, I would love to be able to answer that question with any sort of assuredness. There's a couple of interesting groups that that I've been working with and looking at, but will they be able to break through the morass of everything else that's out there? I'm just not that smart. I can't predict that. But a group that has piqued my interest is a group from El Paso, Texas, called Murder FM, and I've done some work with them, seen them live, and with the right situation, they're ready to take that next step. Now, whether or not it happens is anybody's guess.
Okay, all right. There's a good clip and save prediction. Hab, what do you think in looking at the business? You're working very closely, on the technology end of it here, but really from any perspective that you have at any point here, what do you think are going to be some of the things coming down the pike?
Well, it's hard to say. Like, I think Bo was just saying that, you know, nobody's got a crystal ball, and if you pretend that you do, you're basically just trying to fool everybody. It's hard to say what will break, what won't. It always comes back to, on the A&R side of things, it's all about the song, and will the song have that lasting ability? Because if the song's there, you know, many things can happen from there. But I've also heard great songs that haven't gone anywhere, so it's hard to say. I was going to say, you know, out of some of the bands that are out there right now, I think you asked this question earlier in the program, but, you know, if I was to think of any band that I think thought's proven themselves, I'd probably want to say, like, the Black Eyed Peas have proven that they can still break through the muck, because they've done it relatively recently in the decade. But as far as developing artists, you know, I'm thinking that the marketplace is going to lend itself more to the, I don't want to say Disney, that's kind of the wrong way to say it, but like the multifaceted artist, the artist who can be on a little bit of television, sing a song, do a movie, do this, do that, you know, like not necessarily just a musician, but I think a multifaceted, you know, an actress, singer, songwriter, you know, the whole kit and caboodle type of thing. Those are the types that I could see break through a little easier than the developing artist who's just a band. But if I was to choose a genre, and Kevin was right, the United States' market is much different than the rest of the world. Typically, United States customers are fickle and single-oriented, very quick to leave you, where European-based audiences and abroad usually stick with you and are very loyal, and they'll hear what you have to say in the next album before they write you off. But if I was to pick a category to delve in, like we are at HOR, I'd say it'd have to be the country world. Country music still seems to do well in the United States, and country fans still seem to buy records, which is what lends itself to that being, or at least doing better than the rest of the markets, in my opinion. But we have an artist named Chase Yocklin on our roster that we have high hopes for, and all you could do is write good songs, perform good songs, and give your best to your fans and hope they respond to that.
Yeah, exactly. And everything should take care of itself from there. That's interesting. Well, artists having become dual or even triple threats here, you know, with branching out into acting and stuff. Maybe it'll be like a return to when Elvis was doing surf movies and stuff. Maybe we'll see a little more of that. Maybe Justin Timberlake in a surf movie. That would be thrilling for a lot of the female populace out there, I suppose. Kevin, what are you thinking looking at this? What are some of your predictions, macro level or micro level, for the time ahead in music?
Well, I'm sure most people know about him, but I think Kings of Leon are probably going to be the arena band of the future, you know, for the U.S. They have already started it. I mean, they broke Europe first, and I think this last record they made major strides in songwriting and just overall appeal, and they're a band that's I think this new record sold 4 or 5 million records, which is that's astronomical figures for these days. But I think they're the next band to kind of take over that slot of you know, and you can consider them a newer band. I mean, they've been around, say, 5 years, 6 years, but they're still really a new band, and it's one of those artists that have developed. I mean, nothing really went on in the first two records other than, you know, critical review, and I think they really survived off breaking Europe initially. You know, and then they were on the U2 Vertigo tour, which, you know, really exposed them to a lot of people. You know, I'm not a huge fan in terms of, I've seen them live a few times. I don't think they compare with some of the bands from the 80s in terms of just pure energy and talent, but that's my prediction. I think they're going to be around for quite a long time and be selling out arenas.
The only way where they compare is, and I kind of made this joke, you know, when I first heard that, you know, their big single there, I thought, you know, gee, Lionel Richie's back, and he's rocking harder than I remember him. You know, some similarity in that voice there. Not a whole lot, but at least a little bit. So at least, you know, well, I'll tell you what, let's get to the other question here that I wanted to ask you guys, give you guys a chance to talk about again. where you guys are at right now at this stage of your career, you know, in the music ecosystem. Start with you, Bo, from your time as a record producer, label executive. What have you got going on right now? What are some of the things you'd like to talk about as far as where your projects are headed?
Well, being an admitted internet neophyte to a certain extent, a couple of years ago, I finally launched my website, which was bohillproductions.com, shameless plug, and got on MySpace. And just by kind of removing the traditional gatekeepers, the managers, A&R guys, lawyers, etc., from the process, artists from around the world just started sending me files, and they started sending me things to mix or edit or do whatever. And so all of a sudden, unbeknownst to me, there was this kind of odd little cottage industry that developed. And so I've stumbled onto some really great things that I've had a lot of fun working on. And that's kind of what I'm doing.
It, by the way, I will mention, too, in our rundown here tonight at thefdhlounge.com, we have a link up there to bohillproductions.com, and we encourage everybody to go check that out. It's an excellent site. You've really, boy, you call yourself an internet neophyte, but, you know, you got a slideshow up on there. You got some nice multimedia working on there. It's a nice site. Definitely.
Oh, well, thank you very much. You're very kind.
Oh no, we like it. It's a good site there. Definitely. Hab, let's talk about what you got going on here with HOR Entertainment Group. It seems like you guys are, you know, obviously with the music business, but you're taking a wider look at you know, different facets of the entertainment industry. You're focused in new media. You must be working on a lot of different platforms and areas of entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely. I started delving into digital media several years ago when I started working for McGee Entertainment, which is the management company that manages Kiss and Ted Nugent, Night Ranger, and Darius Rucker, and several other artists. And from there, I kind of branched off on my own, created my own consulting company to kind of help other management companies besides McGee and other label services kind of companies in the digital media world. I kind of give them advice, not necessarily on what to do, but sometimes it's more important to know what not to do to save you time and money, and that's critical in the music business. So in creating that consulting company, I met and joined forces with Larry Lee and Kurt Cuomo from HOR Entertainment Group, and we kind of joined forces and realized that to be kind of in West Hollywood out here in Hollywood, it's a dirty word to say the word label almost. It's like you kind of have to be a multifaceted company and be able to deliver the goods and different categories. Like, so we realize that it's not just a record business anymore, it's a music business. So we created a record company that is focused on singles, and depending on how those singles are received, we then move on to the album cycle. But we know that times have changed. We're more of a single society, and beyond just the single, we've also realized that publishing is where a lot of the revenue opportunities are in the music business. Besides selling physical plastic discs, there's the placement of music, the synchronization of music, that also, you know, adds a lot to an artist's career. So not only do we release records and distribute them, but we also write and produce and arrange and kind of do the publishing route for the artists as well. And along with that, we're also putting together some reality series that we could also then focus or showcase some of our artists on. So we're trying to tap into all areas of the entertainment business to try to make credible, you know, music industry careers for our artists, not just, like, that's why I said I think the future of the business is going to be not just musicians but entertainers.
Well, it's got to be a fascinating journey attacking this from so many different angles as you're doing. By the way, and you mentioned Kurt Cuomo. He was actually the gentleman who our producer Steve Cervillo had met, and that was how we became aware of your company. Kurt was originally going to be on. You graciously agreed to be on when he couldn't make it tonight, and you've been tremendous. We're grateful that you came on with us here. Kevin,
yeah,
I'd like
appreciate
to ask
it.
You the same question here. With your background as a producer and an engineer and a lot of the legendary groups that you've worked with. As the music business continues to evolve right now, where are you at? What are some of the things you're involved in that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I basically am doing things I enjoy, and I'm out of the, not out of it, but pretty much beside the business side of it. And I've always been a live engineer as well as a studio engineer, producer, and I've been working with Kelly Clarkson the last couple years doing live shows and touring and just getting ready to go back to Europe and South Africa and Australia and Far East. Doing that, it's you know, usually doing 3 or 4 shows a week and mixing an unbelievable singer, and it's so I bounce around and over the last few years I've done Aerosmith and Journey and a bunch of different live shows, and it's just a lot of fun.
Well, gentlemen, I want to say, you know, we wanted to do this round table tonight, get some folks who'd worked in the business at different levels and different areas of it, and have a good, well-rounded kind of discussion and overview. And I feel like the audience really learned a lot here tonight. I can't thank the three of you enough, Bo Hill, Kevin Elson, Hab Haddad. We'd love to reconvene at some point. You guys were great. We would. You guys are welcome back anytime.
Okay. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much. Hopefully we can do this again sometime. Really appreciate it. We have info up, links to their websites on our rundown here tonight. Bo Hill, Hab Haddad, Kevin Elson. Thank you again, gentlemen.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. So we want to thank them all for having been on.